I thought I'd go over one of the factors of sampajana or clear comprehension. And in the sort of introductory section where the Buddha's introducing the different satipatthanas, there's a phrase, atapi sampajano satima. And that's atapi is usually like diligence. And then sampajano is this clear comprehension, and satima is mindfulness. So it's there's three qualities that need to be developed in developing all these satipatthanas. So I'll do, again, from Jnanatiloka's dictionary, just the clear comprehension. I like just the very first sentence of it was, or just first definition was, clarity of consciousness. One way of kind of thinking about it. And then it said clear comprehension. And then I'm going to read just one page from Bhante Ji's book again on Four Foundations of Mindfulness. He starts off the chapter with a sutta, and it's a sutta from the book 47, number 7, called The Monkey. Bhikkhus, in the Himalaya, the king of mountains, there are rugged and uneven zones where neither monkeys nor human beings can go. There are rugged and uneven zones where monkeys can go, but not human beings. There are even and delightful regions where both monkeys and humans can go. There, along the monkey trails, hunters set out traps of pitch for catching monkeys. Those monkeys who are not foolish and frivolous, when they see the pitch, avoid it from afar. But a monkey who is foolish and frivolous approaches the pitch and seizes it with a hand. He gets caught there, thinking, I will free my hand. He seizes it with the other hand. He gets caught there, thinking, I will free both hands. He seizes it with his foot. He gets caught there, thinking, I will free both hands and my foot. He seizes it with the other foot. He gets caught there, thinking, I will free both the hands and feet. He applies his muzzle to it and gets caught there. Thus, bhikkhus, that monkey trapped at five points, lies there screeching. He has met his calamity and disaster, and the hunter can do with him as he wishes. The hunter spears him, fastens him to that same block of wood, and goes off where he wants. So it is, bhikkhus, when one strays outside of one's own resort into the domain of others. Therefore, bhikkhus, do not stray outside of your own resort into the domain of others. Mara will gain access to those who stray outside of their own resort into the domain of others. Mara will get hold of them. And what is not the bhikkhu's own resort, but the domain of others? It is the five cords of sensual pleasure. This is what is not a bhikkhu's own resort, but the domain of others. Move in your own resort, bhikkhus, in your own ancestral domain. Mara will not gain access to those who move in their own resort, but in their own ancestral domain. Mara will not get a hold of them. And what is the bhikkhu's resort? What is his ancestral domain? It is the four establishments of mindfulness. What here? A bhikkhu dwells contemplating the body in the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure with regard to the world. He dwells contemplating feelings and feelings, mind and mind, phenomena and phenomena, ardent, clearly comprehending, mindful, having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world. This is a bhikkhu's resort. This is his ancestral domain. So Bhante Ji opens up the chapter number 3 on clear comprehension with that sutta. This story illustrates an essential element of the Buddha's message. Every calamity or disaster we experience begins with our own unwise actions. If we want to end our suffering, we must look carefully at the activities of our own body and mind. This is the laboratory where we must work very hard. With the instrument of mindfulness and clear comprehension, We investigate our body, feelings, perceptions, thoughts, and consciousness, not as biologist, chemist, or pathologist, but more profoundly as a meditator whose aims are spiritual development, and deep insight. In every activity, whether we are sitting, standing, walking, lying down, talking, eating, or meditating, mindfulness and clear comprehension work together to help us see that whatever we are experiencing is temporary and thus can never bring us lasting satisfaction. Moreover, though we may think we understand perfectly what is happening, often we are confused and deluded. So, what is clear comprehension? Traditionally, it has four aspects: purpose, suitability, domain, and non-delusion. In brief, purpose means that there's a good reason for us to engage in the activity. Suitability means that it has the activity, that the activity fulfills the purpose. Domain, as we see from the story of the foolish monkey, means that the activity lies within appropriate boundaries. Finally, non-delusion means that while we are doing the activity, we are investigating whether we understand clearly what is going on. And then there's a note from one of the suttas that gives a little better, not better, but just gives it a little more slightly different variation of those four domains or reasons for clear comprehension. Briefly, the four are clear comprehension of purposefulness, which means discerning a worthy purpose in one's intended actions, clearly comprehension of suitability, means discerning a suitable means for achieving one's aim, 3, clearly comprehension of resort, means, this is a different one which I like, maintaining awareness of one's meditation subject when engaged in various activities. And then 4, comprehension of as non-delusion, discerning one's actions as conditioned process, devoid of a substantial self. For further information, see Jnana Ponika's The Heart of Buddhist Meditation. Any questions about that?
Good check. That was a footnote regarding the commentaries. Is that right?
It's yes, that is commentarial, yes. Yeah, even Bhante Jesus. Okay, so I'm going to go to Anguttara Nikaya, Book of the Tens, Sutta 61, which is called Ignorance. Bhikkhus, this is said, a first point of ignorance, bhikkhus, is not seen such that before this there was no ignorance, and afterwards it came into being. Still, ignorance is seen to have a specific condition. I say, bhikkhus, that ignorance has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment of ignorance? It is said to be the five hindrances. The five hindrances, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without a nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the five hindrances? It should be said that the three kinds of misconduct, I say, too, have a nutriment, are not without a nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the three kinds of misconduct? It should be said, non-restraint of the sense faculties. Non-restraint of the sense faculties, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for non-restraint of the sense faculties? It should be said, lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension. Lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without a nutriment. And what is the nutriment for lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension? It should be said, careless attention. Careless attention, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without a nutriment. And what is the nutriment for careless attention? It should be said, lack of faith. Lack of faith, too, I say, has a nutriment, it is not without a nutriment. And what is the nutriment for lack of faith? It should be said, not hearing the good Dhamma. Not hearing the good Dhamma, too, I say, has a nutriment. It is not without a nutriment. And what is the nutriment for not hearing the good Dhamma? It should be said, not association with good persons. Thus, not association with good persons, becoming full, fills up, not hearing good Dhamma. And becoming fills up lack of faith. Becoming fills up careless attention, fills up lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension, fills up non-restraint of the sense faculties, fills up three kinds of misconduct, fills up the five hindrances. The five hindrances becoming fill up ignorance. Thus, there is a nutriment for ignorance, and in this way, it becomes full. Just as when it is raining and the rain pours down in thick droplets on the mountaintop, the water flows down along the slopes and fills the clefts, gullies, and creeks. Those become full, fill up the pools. Those becoming full, fill up the lakes. And those becoming full, fill up the streams. These becoming full, fill up the rivers. These becoming full, fill up the great oceans. Thus there is a nutriment for the great ocean, and it is in this way it becomes full. So too, not association with good person fills up not hearing the good Dhamma. The five hindrances become fill up ignorance. Thus there is nutriment for ignorance. It is in this way it becomes full. I say, bhikkhus, that true knowledge and liberation has a nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the true knowledge and liberation? It should be said, the seven factors of enlightenment. The seven factors of enlightenment, too, I say, have a nutriment. They are not without a nutriment. And what is the nutriment for the seven factors of enlightenment? It should be said, the four establishments of mindfulness. And then goes on, the three, nutriment for that is the three kinds of good conduct. Nutriment for that is restraint of the sense faculties. The nutriment for that is mindfulness and clear comprehension. Mindfulness, nutriment for that is careful attention. Mindfulness of careful attention is faith. Nutriment for that is hearing the good Dhamma. And the nutriment for hearing the good Dhamma is association with good persons. Thus, association with good person fills up hearing the good Dhamma through all of those. Just as when it is raining, and the rain drops down in thick droplets, again, everything becomes filled up to the ocean. So too, association with good persons becoming fills up hearing good Dhamma. The seven factors of enlightenment becoming full fill up true knowledge and liberation. Thus, there is a nutriment for true knowledge and liberation, and in this way, they become full. Any questions or comments?
This, I guess, in terms of causal sequences, this one seems very much time-bound rather than some are sort of instantaneous.
I like the point that the root is association with good friends, with good people.
Mm. Yeah.
And you're kind of leading on to all the subsequent points.
Yeah, with that, I'll actually skip and read. That's a good point. So from the Sunyutta 46 again, Sutta 12 and 13. Bhikkhus, this is the forerunner and precursor of the arising of the sun. It is dawn. So too, bhikkhus, for a bhikkhu, this is the forerunner and precursor for the arising of the seven factors of enlightenment, that is, good friendship. When a bhikkhu has a good friend, it is to be expected that he will develop and cultivate the seven factors of enlightenment. And how Does a bhikkhu who has good friend develop and cultivate the seven factors? And he goes through the, just mentions all of them. And then the next sutta, Sutta 13, also is simile of the sun. Bhikkhus, this is the forerunner and precursor of the arising of the sun, that is, the dawn. So too, bhikkhus, for a bhikkhu, this is the forerunner, the precursor for the arising of the seven factors of enlightenment, that is, careful attention. When a bhikkhu is accomplished in careful attention, it is to be expected that he will develop and cultivate the seven factors of enlightenment. And then there's a note to this one. Because when I first read that, it's like, you can, if you read the first one, then you read the second one. It does sort of lead to, well, maybe what he's saying is the good friendship is the clearly knowing, clear comprehension. But there's a note here. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you do hear, like, the Kalyanamitta is translated as sort of like, you know, the good friend is like mindfulness or is the Eightfold Path. I've heard that translation. But so Bhikkhu Bodhi has this note here. It says, so the Kalyanamitta bhikkhu is sometimes translated as a bhikkhu who is a friend of righteousness. He has the Woodward has a monk who is a friend of what is lovely, Ireland, a bhikkhu who is friends of the good. Then he writes, these renderings are all rest on a misunderstanding of the grammatical form of the expression. And then he says, probably a proper translation of it would be as means a bhikkhu who has a good friend, as opposed to sort of, which I think you guys support Nyanika's too. That's interesting, just, you know, how having friendship in the holy life can help to foster these qualities. Okay, so I'll go back to the Anguttara Nikaya, book four. This is in a subchapter called Rohitasa. It has the story of them traveling, trying to reach the end of the universe, but that's not the sutta we'll read here. This one's called Concentration. Bhikkhus, there are these four developments of concentration. What for? There is a development of concentration that leads to dwelling happily in this very life. There is development of concentration that leads to obtaining knowledge and vision. There is development of concentration that leads to mindfulness and clear comprehension. There is development of concentration that leads to the destruction of the taints. And what, bhikkhus, is the development of concentration that leads to dwelling happily in this life? Here, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a bhikkhu enters and abides in the first jhana, which consists of rapture and pleasure born of seclusion, accompanied by thought and examination. With the subsiding of thought and examination, he enters and dwells in the second jhana, which has internal plasticity and unification of mind, and consists of rapture and pleasure born of concentration, without thought and examination. With the fading away as well of rapture, he dwells equanimously and mindful, clearly comprehending. He experiences pleasure with the body. He enters and dwells in the third jhana, of which the noble ones declare he is equanimous, mindful, one who dwells happily. With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous passing away of joy and dejection, he enters and dwells in the fourth jhana, neither painful nor pleasant, which has purification of mindfulness by equanimity. This is called the development of concentration that leads to dwelling happily in this very life. And what is the development of concentration that leads to obtaining knowledge and vision? Here a bhikkhu attends to the perception of light. He focuses on the perception of day thus, as by day, so by night, as by night, so by day. Thus, with a mind that is open and uncovered, He develops a mind imbued with luminosity. This is the development of concentration that leads to obtaining knowledge and vision. And what is the development of concentration that leads to mindfulness and clear comprehension? Here a bhikkhu knows feelings as they arise, as they remain present, as they disappear. He knows perceptions as they arise, as they remain present, and as they disappear. He knows thoughts as they arise, as they remain present, and as they disappear. This is the development of concentration that leads to mindfulness and clear comprehension. And what is the development of concentration that leads to the destruction of the taints? Here a bhikkhu dwells contemplating arising and vanishing of the five aggregates, subject to clinging, such as form, such its origin, such its passing away, such as feeling, such as perceptions, such are mental or volitional activities, such is consciousness, such is its origin, such its passing away. This is the development of concentration that leads to the destruction of taints. These are the four developments of concentration, and it was with reference to this that I said in the Parayana, in the questions, having comprehended the world's highs and lows, he is not perturbed by anything in the world. Peaceful, fumeless, untroubled, wishless, he has, I said, crossed over birth and old age. And there's that in the development of concentration that leads to attaining knowledge and vision. There's the as by day, as by night. I remember I was reading that earlier and I couldn't find the reference to it, but with the footnote I had seen on it earlier, it was it's like whatever sort of meditation object you're working with during the day, you know, if it's working for you, then when you at nighttime, you just continue with that same meditation object. And then if something's working for you at night, then when you go to into the daytime, you use that. So it's just basically applying effort. Yeah, it's the same as daytime, and you do it nighttime. Yeah.
Yes, I'd be curious if anyone felt that they could expound the significance between numbers, what the differences are between the third and the fourth, and whether there's anything significant there. Their descriptions seem similar, but not quite the same.
What is present in the third jhana is the quality of happiness and bodily pleasure, and what is predominant in the fourth jhana is equanimity.
Well, I'm not quite sure what my question
is about the difference between mindfulness and clear comprehension.
Well, concentration that leads to mindfulness and clear comprehension, and a concentration that leads to the destruction of the taints as described in the sutta.
Oh, okay. Well, one is the mindfulness and clear comprehension is your sort of holding something as an object for clarity, whereas the fourth one is a holding an object in attention for relinquishment. Because sometimes it doesn't necessarily, just because you're mindful of something, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to actually let go of anything. So that inclination to relinquishment and letting go is an important factor. So that paying attention to the arising and passing away is a conditioning factor for disenchantment, dispassion, or relinquishment.
And is it significant the body is only mentioned in number four in the fourth one? Because the third one is seeing feelings, perceptions, and thoughts. Mm-hmm. So the third one basically seems to be focused on purely on the mind. Whereas the fourth one.
Yes, because that focus is for mindfulness and clear comprehension, so it's a mental factor. Whereas the fourth one is the overcoming the obstacle, which is the penetration of non-self. So that both body and mind are important to be taking in as perspectives for the penetration of non-self.
It's kind of a sad memory kind of thing that the third one of the thought feelings and perceptions arising and maintaining ceasing is also what Buddha describes as one of the wonderful and marvelous qualities of the Tathagata.
Yeah.
Zach, you just ruined my next reading.
Oh.
Okay.
No.
I just said a comment on seeing a day as a night, and as he practices by night, so by day as a day, so by night. I remember a few of the Nanachat monks under Lumpur Liam's Kuti asking questions, and somebody almost always inevitably asks, how much should we sleep? And this Lumpur Liam says, well, you know, usually if you're like, you know, 20 to 30 or whatever, you sleep 6 hours, or 30 to 45 hours, or over 40, you could probably sleep 4 hours. And he said, but if you cultivate a perception of as by day, so by night, as by night, so by day, then it doesn't matter how long you sleep.
Yeah. Okay, I think that's enough for today. I think that's enough.